Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, ladies. Hello, gentlemen. This is the Victor Davis Hanson Show. I'm Jack Fowler. The host, the star, the namesake Victor Davis Hanson is the Martin and Ely Anderson Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne and Marsha Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. Victor's official home on the World Wide Webs is victorhanson.com, a thing to which you should be subscribed. We'll discuss that later in this show. There's so much to talk about, as there always is, but I think we'll begin this particular episode by talking about the racism of the word the. And we'll get to that right after these important messages.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. My friend, by the way, I was at an event in New York City yesterday. A number of people stopped me, just huge fans of this podcast and letting me know just how effing lucky I was to be talking to you every week. I'd kill for that job. Actually, one guy I thought would have killed, but he was nice enough. So, Victor,
yes.
This morning, my old friend Tom Carroll, and Tom is the superintendent of schools for the Boston Archdiocese. And you can imagine, but it's Roman Catholicism. There are a lot of Catholic schools still in the Boston area. Tom is super, super guy. Anyway, he tweeted something. And he had picked up on the AP style book, the Associated Press, which, by the way, you know the first word in the name, the Associated Press? It's the. So, but the AP style book tweet said this, and I have my glasses on. "We recommend avoiding general and often dehumanizing, quote unquote, the labels such as the poor, the mentally ill, the French, the disabled, the college educated. Instead, use wording such as people with mental illnesses and use the descriptions only when clearly relevant." So Tom, who's really hardcore Catholic and super smart guy, tweeted back at them at AP, "I guess the thought police at AP have banned Jesus Christ offering the Beatitudes at the Sermon on the Mount. It's now politically incorrect to say blessed are the poor, or blessed are the meek, or blessed are the peacemakers. Any Christians done with this nonsense yet?" AP style book pulled their tweet. I don't know if they're changing their style book, Victor. And by the way, most publications or media entities have these things called style books. You know, what words do we italicize, capitalize, et cetera. National Review, where I was a publisher for a number of years.
I dealt with them for 20 years at the Chicago Tribune. Right. I'm still dealing with them. Yeah. Yes.
Well, this, Victor, I would like to get your take on how the word "the" now has become a tool to use by the left to imply racism or whatever other kind of ism they promulgate in their fight to destroy Western
civilization.
Victor, what are your thoughts about this?
This is some recent graduate from an American university that are all woke. He has too much time on his hands. He wants a promotion. He feels he's worth $150,000. So he's got to have something that shows his boss or his superiors that he's the wokest of the woke. So he does this ridiculous "the." And you don't, every time Hillary Clinton goes before a crowd, she says something like the following: "I'm so happy to be here with the LGBTQ plus community, and I'm so happy to be among the Black community, and I'm so happy and delighted to be among the Latino community," right? So what, it's not "the," it's just they don't want to use "the" to objectify a particular group that they feel is what, marginalized, oppressed, victimized. But it's okay to objectify other people. So when Hillary Clinton says, "I'm happy to be here with the Black community," she means all 100% of the Black community. Everyone has to believe you're like Hillary Clinton, because if you're Clarence Thomas and you're Tom Sowell or Shelby Steele, then you're not a part of the Black community. So you shouldn't take these people serious. They just make up the rules as they go along ad hoc, depending on what is the usefulness of any given day, at any place, any time of this woke mantra. It's, you know, there was a meeting this week of the Stanford Faculty Senate to discuss the embarrassment brought upon that university by their euphemism list of all those words, remember, that they outlawed, like citizen and American. So
we discussed that.
Right. So I think it's backfiring. There are people, I say backfiring, and it's irrelevant. And that's the worst form of contempt. People don't even care about these things anymore. They just go ahead. And so the poor, the Jewish community, the white community, the Black community, blessed are the meek. So I don't think anybody's going to pay any attention to it. These people are a product of a leisure, affluent society that have nothing to do. I'm more interested, I think they should be, I should say, more interested in, right now, Vladimir Putin said he's dealing with the Taliban to buy our, 40,000? Let me repeat that. 40,000 vehicles that were left. These are heavy trucks, Humvees, et cetera, that were left in Kabul, and the 1.5 million of small arms and larger machine guns that were left, and the 1.5 million artillery shells that were left. That's what they should be worrying about. And I don't know. It brings up another argument about the core of the United States. You could really see it in Roman culture. So when Rome was out on the frontier fighting the Parthians, or the what later became the Persians, or they were up in northern British Isles fighting the Scots, or they were periodically dealing who would become known as the Arabs. In Rome, you had the Satyricon. And so if you read that novel, you can see what the issues were in, you know, southern Italy, in the Bay of Naples, rich Bay of Naples, and Capri, in other words, and that they were transgenderism, transvestism, bisexuality, exotic food, how leisure, types of wine. In other words, it was the indulgence of the appetite. So as these empires expanded, it was rotten at the core. And the same thing is true, say, in 18, I'm just taking a date, Jack, say 1842. That was the year of the first Afghan war, when, you remember when they'd evacuated Kabul, the British did, 16,000 people. Right. They were wiped out. They left one person, the Afghans did. So
one
he
man,
could,
right?
Yeah, so he could go tell everybody of the war. And while that was happening, Dickens was writing these novels about rampant crime, poverty. David Copperfield came a little later, you know, Oliver Twist, etc. And I feel the same thing about the United States, that we had our own Afghan debacle, but it was the same thing. If you go to Los Angeles, like I have done twice in the last 2 months in the downtown area, or if you go to downtown San Francisco, like I did about 8 months ago, not too long ago, after that, actually, and then you look at where we are all over the world, it's rotten at the core. It's completely rotten at the core. And I think Dave Rubin wrote a good thing today about trying to go talk to Elon Musk at Twitter and the complete corruption that he inherited at Twitter. And I mean corruption from incompetence in the actual coding to the cancel culture and shadow banning to the difficulty that he had getting there, walking through the detritus of what is now downtown San Francisco. And so here we are all over the world going to save Ukraine, and we have an open border and we have a Satyricon right in the middle of our city, just like Dickens, Dickensian London or Petronian Rome. There has to be a connection when these empires spread all of their resources around the globe and all of their psychic and spiritual and intellectual energy and material wealth, and then they just write off their entire core at home. And that's what is decadent about this society, when these people have nothing better to do than to dream up words like, let's ban the objectifying the.
Well, Victor, as you just mentioned, this Stanford, that Stanford list that came out, and of course, in recent years, the replacement of pronouns, him and her, is Z and Z and whatever the frick. But the use of language is a tool in the ideological war, and to keep those of us who believe in Western civilization backpedaling, sure, you know, say that the word the is a racist term or imbued with hate. You mentioned a couple of the topics that touch on other things we should be talking about. Russia, we'll get to that later. Also, I want to talk about what's going on in Atlanta later. But I'm curious, you raised the Stanford Faculty Senate having a meeting about embarrassment. Did that come? Was that broad based? Not that Stanford has anything broad based. I think
no, it was not
on the left. But
yes,
what instigated it?
It was a react. It was this. They're not conservative, but there are faculty members that are classical liberal, i.e., liberal in the sense of the old, I guess you would call them Bill Clinton Democrats, and they feel that they were widely embarrassed nationwide by these crazy euphemisms. Can't use immigrant, you can't use citizen. And they wanted to find the culprits responsible who did that. And the reason they did that is they had got a direction from the administration, I should say a wink and a nod, because they took that down. You remember that? And then the president's office issued a statement that didn't speak for the university. I don't know why it didn't speak for the university, to tell you that. It didn't, because it does typify or reify the administration's views about, they do it all the time. Because I know that because I have to take those 3-hour indoctrination videos every year to retain my job. And that's what they are. They're about language like that. But my point is, they found it very embarrassing. And so some members of the faculty took that cue and say, well, then let's pursue this and see who did it to prevent it. And I guess the subtext, Jack, is that there must have been hundreds of alumni that got furious about it, because the way these people think, and I'm not criticizing these people objectifying with the plural nominative pronoun, but what I mean is that people play golf, or they're going to lunch in Midtown Manhattan or Menlo Park, and they're Stanford graduates or Harvard graduates, and they have a certain currency about their degree or their pedigree. And when they see it shamed or reviled or an object of ridicule, as in the Stanford can we count the ways? The Bankman-Fried parents, and they were in the news, Jack. They were in the news because they're a subject of an inquiry about how they got that property and whether they had it transferred to them properly or retransferred back properly, i.e., what were the tax consequences? And then there's Bankman-Fried, and then there's this Caroline Ellison. She's a Stanford graduate. We're on top of the Elizabeth Combs Therano. She was recently sentenced. We had another law professor during the Kavanaugh thing attack Barron Trump. The president is under pressure to resign because of an allegation that he improperly doctored or produced. I don't quite understand what the verb would be. Illustrations in a jointly signed scholarly article in the medical field that was misleading or could be misleading. I can go on, but you can see what I'm saying. So there, at some point, that brand, which is a career and salary enhancer, starts to lose all currency. And then when that happens, people say, now, wait a minute. It's sort of like going out and saving your money and buying a Lexus or a Mercedes. And then the next year, all you hear about is unsafe at any speed, Ralph Nader type hit stories on it, you know, recall, breakdown, strikes. And then all of a sudden, that little insignia on your car is worth nothing. And that's how people feel about these Ivy League elite schools. So they're very protective of their reputation. And yes, they like the idea that it's cool right. and hip to be woke. And so they want their university to be more woke than the other one. As long as that's the perceived majority opinion. But if that brings with it this odium or embarrassment, then they feel, now, wait a minute. I thought this was going to enhance my brand. I didn't think it was going to deprecate it. And then they call in and say, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah. Well, it's, I guess, heartening that there's still a little bit of common, maybe a modicum of common sense at Stanford. Hey, Victor,
I don't know if I'd go that far.
You don't, go ahead. Okay, I'm sorry. I was being hopeful. Hey, there were these riots in Atlanta, and let's talk about them right after this important message.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show, the happy home of the Victor Davis Hanson Show is justthenews.com. That's John Solomon's website. You should check that out. But if you're going to check out websites, you should be checking out victorhanson.com. And you should subscribe because there's ample material there, articles that Victor writes exclusively for that website, Ultra Articles. And it costs $5 to sign up, $50. For the year, there's a current series of pieces Victor's written for Ultra. We'll talk about them on the next podcast we'll record. But if you're a fan of Victor, not only listening but reading, you're not getting the full Victor unless you subscribe. So please consider doing that. Victor, I'm checking out a headline today. Again, this Friday at Breitbart. Brian Kemp, he's the governor of Georgia. Brian Kemp declares state of emergency after anti-police riots activates Georgia National Guard. Victor, I'm sure most of the listeners saw these clips of Antifa types running rampant through Atlanta. Some of these people, many of them, some who were arrested, were, of course, of prestigious backgrounds. One was the kid of the House, Democrat House Minority Whip, a congresswoman from Massachusetts. I've said this before, Victor, I just don't get it. This Antifa is a threat to businesses. It's a threat to cities. It's a threat to democracy. It's wreaked havoc upon this country. And why the hell it hasn't been a main objective of the or too busy, you know, going after parents at school board meetings, FBI, why this real threat to domestic tranquility is not a priority is striking. I'm glad Governor Kemp, of course, has called out the National Guard, but damn, you know, much more action needs to be taken on a, I believe, on a national level to what is a really a national threat. Anyway, I'm granted your thoughts.
Well, you answered your own question when you said these people were very elite and they were related to very prominent people. And what does that mean in reality? That means that a CEO goes to lunch with a congresswoman or a professor and they say, you know, old Bob got kind of out of hand and he got arrested and he hooked up with Antifa. But that's not a form of shame, Jack. That is that my son is so zealous for human rights and equity and inclusion and diversity that he was willing to go down there. So for them, it's not, it won't change unless it becomes an article of shame. And what would that entail? Well, it would entail the antithesis of 2020 when 14,000 people were arrested and about 99% of them were let go. If that, I don't know if you heard that attorney general who's been on the airwaves in Georgia, I think his name was Carr. Was it Carr? He said, if you're going to come down to Georgia and you're going to burn and attack police and shoot, you're going to pay a big price. We're not your laboratory. And if they can, if they indict those people on things like conspiracy and racketeering, i.e., did they use social media and the airwaves to coordinate these demonstrations, and they put them in jail for 3 to 5 years, then that parent won't say, oh, wow, I'm so proud of my son who was released 24 hours later. No, they'll say, oh, my God, I got $250,000 legal bill and he's got a felony conviction and he's not going to get into Yale Law School. That's the kind of difference it'll make. But for right now, the elite of our country see no opprobrium at all in doing that. After all, it's Georgia. And after all, it's a bunch of crackers that you go down there and you lecture them and you do a little damage and then wham. You go back to your home. And they think the people that come there think that Massachusetts or Minnesota or Michigan or especially Seattle or Portland, that's the United States. Because why wouldn't they think that? They get a complete pass every time they commit an act of violence. It's a summer of love, remember? Summer of love. So we're not going to change any of this until I think people forget that historically guilt doesn't do it. When we transferred from a shame to a guilt society, and there's a lot of anthropological research on that. Bernard Williams really did a great job of it, writing about the difference between shame and guilt in the ancient world. But this idea you're going to feel bad yourself rather than other people are going to make sure you feel bad because you're not going to have the same reputation that you did before, or you're not going to have the same latitude of activity or experience, that's different. So if you turn crime into a shameful act, it will cease. If you make it into just something where I feel a little regret about it, but there's no consequences, then it's going to continue. And that's what's happened with this weaponization of the government. We've got to bring back, I mean, does Christopher Steele feel any shame? Does Adam Schiff feel any shame? No, they might feel a little guilty that he, I don't know, just, if you got Adam Schiff in a bar and had two drinks, you said, hey, you really kind of did a number when you swore that that laptop was Russian disinformation. Remember when you read into the congressional record Trump's phone call and it was completely fabricated? Remember when you told the nation you had no idea who that whistleblower was and you didn't communicate with Mr. Vindman until the hearing? And you remember how you lied? Yeah, I kind of felt bad about that. If he were just, that doesn't mean anything. If he's kicked off the committee, And he's now in a shrill voice trying to tell how poor Adam Schiff has been a victim of awful Kevin McCarthy. And everybody's, if there's consequences, and Adam Schiff takes a hit and he has to stutter and murmur and stumble through his exegesis, which he does now, it's so unfair. I'm not going to back down. And everybody's saying, well, wait a minute. You guys started it and McCarthy finished it. You took people off committees. It just happened to be you that had to pay the price for Nancy Pelosi's new precedent. And you can stand, you know, it was like you can spend your time on any other committee. You can be the undersecretary, the subcommittee of the subcommittee of the subcommittee of national sewage policy, but you can't be on the House Intelligence Committee. And you can't go in front of a camera and wink and say, I can't tell you stuff that I've seen, but I'm not going to comment. That would be improper of me to tell you anything about Donald Trump's collusion with Vladimir Putin. Let's just say that I have examined the evidence and I alone know it. And it is stunning, but I can't get into it. That's what he did for 5 years. And he's angry that he can't do that because he's running here in California for Senate.
Angry on TikTok, by the way. I think, kind of
perfect.
Delightful.
Perfect. Yeah. He needs a platform, and that was his platform to be in the news every night. And, you know, they're not going to, Joy Reid is not going to have him on for her 500,000 viewers every evening if he doesn't do something. So that's what it's all about. We need to get back to I'm not saying, you know, a scarlet letter. But we do need a little bit of shaming. And if we did certain things where if a person committed a crime and he was arrested and they had the person's name and photo and age, and I think we should go back from 18 down to 16, to tell you the truth, as that used to be, I can remember when I was 10 years old, I won't get into any detail, but there was a prominent citizen of my hometown. And he was very prominent and very wealthy and very well connected. And his son was caught in a burglary break-in, right? And they, in those days, the liberal, progressive, left-wing, McClatchy, Fresno B, printed everybody's name. I think they even printed their address. I guess we call that doxing. And their age. And boy, Jack, when that went out, that family was just devastated. You know what I mean? It was just like the whole town thought, oh my God, how can somebody with all those advantages end up as a thief trying to destroy the livelihood of a poor little business?
You know, tarnish the honor of the family name.
Exactly. Yeah. Remember, I thought Joe Biden thought that. Remember when he said, swear to God as a Biden. When he was lying, he said, swear, as a Biden. I thought, well, you shouldn't have said that because now we know you're a liar. Because the Biden name is synonymous with prevarication, lying.
Yeah. You know, that shame game or the unashamedness about shame kind of started, well, I'm sure my memory is weak on this, but remember when Barney Frank and Jerry Studs were both censured by the House of Representatives for Barney Frank was hot bottom and Jerry Studd was because he was diddling with some of the House pages, and they turned their back on the House when it came the moment of, you know, censure, condemnation, and they never paid a price for it. I'm sure Al Franken more recent time is regretting stepping down from the Senate for, like, why the hell did I give up my seat for this photograph I took? Well, all these other characters over the year never.
I think they would call it
whether or not
we've gone full circle though. So when Gary Studs did that, and there was that guy, the other guy was running a house of prostitution or something
He had ads, a hot bottom.
I don't know what it was, but we went from that being basically that was not good, especially in the case of Studs having relations with somebody who was not 18 or 21. I can't remember which it was.
The pages, I don't think are eight. I think they're younger than 18, like 14, 15, 16.
Exactly. And then we had that. And then we we had that, you know, that we didn't really care too much, unfortunately, I guess, because that wasn't completely shameful. Then we went into protect the children stage, and it was really shameful. And now it's weird. We're going back to it again. Have you noticed they've changed the word from pederasty, or, you know, it doesn't exist anymore. And it's now, is it relations with a minor partner or something? They use the euphemism for an older man having sexual. It's very strange, is what I'm trying to get at, is that the left that really was on a moral crusade to protect children from sexual, I don't know what would be innuendo, sexual agenda, sexual stimulation.
Tribe things even. Remember, Janet Reno became a star over these bizarre fake daycare center.
Exactly. And so what I don't understand is that if somebody out in rural Fresno County, because it's in the paper here a lot, downloads, I guess it's, I don't know where they get it, but it's on the internet, of graphic sex with minors, right? They have law enforcement units that try to spot that or entrap people, even, you know. And I am fine with that if they want to do that. But then when you have that attitude, how can you turn around and have these transgendered shows where children are allowed to attend who can't go into a bar? And when these people grope their own sexual organs, or they talk in very graphic language about homosexual sexual activity or any of that. And so, and these are young minors. So what I'm getting at is the left took it upon themselves to draw a strict line about sexual activity in minors in a way that had not been really true in the 50s and early 60s. And they were almost puritanical, and it was good. It was welcome, fine. But now that it's taken place, the transgendered and gay communities have pushed back. I remember there was this thing called the North American Man Boy Love Association, NAMBA or something?
NAMBLA. North American Man Boy Lover Association.
And that was part of the 60s, Let It All Hang Out. And they were really riding their high horse. And then this reaction came. Well, now we're back to that because we're not saying anything. I have no problem if a guy downloads a pornographic picture of somebody having sexual intercourse with an underage minor, fine. The possession of that enhances that industry. But what is the difference from that and putting on a show where there are people in the audience that you grope and you point to your sexual organs to, and you talk about sex in front of them, or you read about that type of activity when the audience is in a library or a group? I don't see the difference, really. I don't. I know that one is more extreme than the other, but I see the same trajectory. And, you know, I don't quite understand teachers who talk about to young people, you need to transition, and you to very young people, or they read books about, you know, some of these books, they make fun of Ron DeSantis, but when you look at the actual books, what they say, and they have drawings of sexual activity that show phalluses and stuff, what's the difference of that and downloading porn? I don't see that. If you have a book that says you may be confused about your sexual orientation, you may need to transgender, these are fluid identities, you need to pick your pronouns, and by the way, these are some of the things that entail an alternate cis lifestyle, and then they show actual graphic drawings, and they do apparently in some rare cases. What's the difference? I don't see it. And that's what's so weird about the left. It's so fluid. It just makes up these relative rules and protocols depending on what their current agenda is on any given day. There's no absolutes with them. And then they want to get, you know, they get very, very, very angry at everybody. And so, anyway,
and intentionality of ideologies, keep your enemy, keep the opposition off guard, stumbling, backpedaling, and these are the ways they engage in it, in part culturally. Again, we were talking about language. I can't say the anymore. I can't say him anymore. All of a sudden, it's okay to have some big fat guy dressed in drag at a kindergarten class in my local town putting on a show. When the hell did this become?
I don't know. Look at those poor students who are all under the age of 18 in that Canadian woodshop teacher with a huge breast.
God.
And even he put in fake nipples on them. And those are right in front of the students. And they will protect that forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember the guy that went into the board meeting and did the same thing to object to him to show you how stupid? And they kicked him out. They thought that was obscene. It's obscene to be to caricature what is obscene for the purpose of eliminating obscenity. If you use the same methodology as the obscenity to caricature to stop that obscenity, then you're the one who's obscene.
Yeah, you'll be the one that published. By the way, I was going it's a little unchristian, but you saw that video of the guy, you mentioned the filth of San Francisco before, the guy who was took a hose to the
yes.
to the bum in front of the he's the one who's getting arrested with all the crap and mayhem going on in the city. It's that guy is the one that's getting arrested.
I think you know what it was, though. It's sort of like Derek Chauvin. If Derek, when you looked at that, I guess it was that smug expression. I don't know if he was smug or not, but his expression where he had the knee on George Floyd's yeah. neck, that radiated a sense of contempt. So that guy was, you know, people would have been sympathetic, but he when he had that hose and he pointed it and he had that smile like I'm just reciting a poem. Where
yeah, no, it's not exactly a Christian activity.
If he had grimaced or he thought, oh my God, I don't want to do this, but he was just like la di da da. It just you're getting wet. Can't hear you. You're wet. That kind of attitude. So, but you're going to see a lot more of this as civilization goes into reverse. You're going to see two reactions to this. You're going to see a monastery of the mind where people withdraw, and we've already seen that, into enclaves. For some, it will be moving to a red state. For some, it will be hunkering down in our enclave. Or some, it will be divorcing yourself from popular culture. And for others, it will be, you know what? I can't take it anymore. I'm going to fight back. And that will be the guy who squirts the people who defecate and shoot drugs in front of his business. And then you have to ask, where's the real morality? Him trying to preserve the sanctity of a business and the cleanness right. civilization of the sidewalk? Or is it the mayor of San Francisco and the police department who condone and abet and aid and fuel that type of activity?
Yeah, well, they don't have a monopoly on civil society, and when you have to take it into your own hands, that's when the problem.
Well, San Francisco is famous for what? The society or the Brotherhood of Vigilantes. In the 1850s, they ran the city for a while, and it was the Barbary Coast. It was kind of like it is now, and they came in, and everybody said they had a terrible reputation, and they did. And then guess what? They cleaned up the city, and then their normal organizations they gave them a breathing space, and they kicked in. And maybe we're going to get to that people will protect their property.
I'm pro-hose. Anyway, and hose, H-O-S-E.
I think pro-hose. It's happening right now. About 4 days ago, a truck drove on my place. I get up very early and walk these cattle dogs, Queenslands, and it's dark. And a truck came by, and it wasn't a state truck with an insignia on it. And so the obvious implication is somebody either dumping trash, fornicating, injecting drugs, or you know, stripping a car or something. But this wasn't. This was an employee. I won't give any information because I don't want to embarrass him, or wouldn't be embarrassing. But it was an employee of a local agency who had his own car, but I didn't know that. So I walked over, and of course the dogs are just going nuts, and he rolls down the window. You know what the first thing he said is? I want to identify myself. I don't want to get shot out here.
Wow.
And I said, shot? And he said, yeah, everybody's armed out here. And he's right.
Yeah.
He's obviously doing his job, but in the course of doing his job, he has run into farmers or property owners that have told him, who are you? And perhaps at the point of a gun. And so I think that's happening right now. We're just seeing the very beginning of it, where a lot of people are saying there is no civilization as we know it in downtown LA or in Baltimore or Chicago. There was that candidate yesterday, it was on the Fox station, who I think it had Tucker. He's an African-American candidate that's running against Lori Lightfoot. And he used the word rabbits. We got to make sure they run like rabbits. And Tucker was wanted to, that was a pretty strange metaphor to use. But what he basically said is his son had been killed and that had prompted him to run for mayor. And as far as he was concerned, the crime wave had to be stopped. And we'll see what happens. So he was talking about it in very explicit terms, but there's an elephant in the room in that particular case, that cohort of African-American males between 14 and 40, which comprise about 3% of the population, according to statistics, account for about 52% of murder victims, but about 53 to 55% of offenders, and as well as juvenile violent crime, for example, among other things. So when you have 3 to 4% of the population committing roughly half of a lot of violent crimes, and you don't think violent crime is tolerable or sustainable without the destruction of civilization, at some point in that conversation, forget the woke taboos, people are going to say we have a problem with this particular age, gender, racial cohort, because they're inordinately represented, especially in a larger framework that the left dwells, obsesses about proportional representation, disparate impact, and the percentage of this group and that group and this group. So once you go down that line of treating people like collectives, then you have to go down the whole line. And I think people will begin to start talking about what Jesse Jackson used to say. Remember, Jesse Jackson said, "I get afraid if somebody, I hear steps behind me. If I turn around, it's an African American youth." So we're going to have to discussion. It will no longer be taboo as this continues, and we're going to see something very dramatic, because they're going to release, as I'm speaking today, Jack, and you are, the tape of this kind of Rodney King incident in Memphis,
right,
with this poor suspect, African-American, who I guess had been resisting arrest in some fashion, was just beaten to a pulp by five officers and beaten savagely. I guess they're even afraid to release the tape. It's so grotesque. And he died in the hospital.
Right.
And so there's a lot of questions that are going to follow this. I think I'm scheduled to talk about it on Laura Ingraham tonight. And the questions that you have are, well, all five of the accused are African-American policemen. So will there be a riot?
We won't have riots then, right?
I don't know. Will the riot be because we don't care about the race of the policemen? We care that they were law enforcement and trusted to do their duty, and they didn't. So therefore, we're going to riot because they killed a suspect? Are they not going to riot because it was never really per se just about policemen? It was about race, and therefore the race is not a matter. Or will they riot and say, you know what, they may have been African-American implementers of these policy, but white people made them up, and therefore they were being used by white people? And what's going to be the reaction? What would you as a protester want? Given what happened after George Floyd, would you say?
Well, right, it's a natural reaction, like, oh my gosh, oh well, they weren't white, so there won't be riots. That would be a natural reaction for people.
Right? Yeah, but what would be your demand? Let's defund the police. And you think, whoa, wait a minute, we defunded the police after George Floyd, and more African Americans got killed than before. So we've already shot that bullet, so to speak, in a graphic simile. So are they going to say, let's partially defund the police, or what are you going to do? And you know that what's very strange about this case, because this is probably much more savage than the George Floyd, because there was always the argument from Officer Chauvin, he didn't mean to kill him, or he didn't beat him to a pulp. He put that to subdue him because he was resisting arrest. And then he was callous, supposedly or purportedly. Or I can say he was callous because he was convicted.
Right.
Whether that was lawful or not, he was convicted. He was convicted of ignoring the pleas for help by a man who was an extremist. Okay. But that's not like he didn't beat the guy's face into a pulp with the help of four other people. So this is this is really awful,
right?
And we'll see what the reaction to it is, because I think people are very wary. And you notice that you haven't had the jump to conclusions that you had with the two Asian American shootings, where Adam Schiff said, you know, we've got to stop the anti-Asian hate, and all these people right. jumped in because you know what? Yeah, I don't know what they're. I think they're perplexed, is what I'm saying.
Right. Right. No, yeah, it's the Asian case, you know, never let a whatever go to
yeah.
waste.
I can't. Yeah. Yeah.
But this
never,
situation.
Never let a Rahm Emanuel, never let a crisis. There's only one proper and moral response to it. And that is, people don't riot, but they say there is something wrong in the hiring or the retention of the Memphis Police Department if these five suspects have had a record of inordinate use of violence. So we're gonna wait, and we're gonna see what were the records of all of these people. If any of them had given indications that they were prone to this type of savagery, and yet they were retained, then I think there's right. gonna be some discussion. But then even then, there's gonna be a question of why were they retained? And that's going to get into even more controversial issues. Was it because it's more difficult to fire an African-American officer in a big city with a majority Black population than it is a Derek Chauvin? I don't know. But that's going to be an issue as well.
Well, Victor, we have time for one other big topic, and that's the war in the Ukraine and some important developments this week, and we'll get your thoughts on that right after this final important message. Back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Some controversies over tanks and the president of Ukraine wanting tanks and America waiting for Germany to step up. And now America has sent tanks and Germany has sent tanks and Russia. Here's the headline of today's Daily Mail website. Russia is now at war with NATO and the West, in quotes. Putin has taken conflict in Ukraine to a different stage. Senior EU official admits following Germany's decision to supply tanks. So, Victor, NATO tanks are now given over to Ukraine to fight in this war. And what might be the ramifications of that, my friend?
Well, so far it's iconic, because I think we're giving what, 20 something, and they gave 30 something. I mean, I think 60 tanks or a tank battalion. That's a lot. And these are not World War II tanks. These are multi-million dollar computer platforms. And some of them, in the case of the United States, Abrams armor, have depleted uranium and top secret reactive armor methodologies. And I don't think we export those. We have one Abrams we export, and the other one we keep for ourselves. But nevertheless, it's a steady escalation. But I have colleagues at the Hoover Institution who swore in public in December that the war was all but over, that Ukraine was on the offensive. They were going to cleanse the Russians out, push them out. And a couple of us, I think we did it on this podcast, but I did it on the air too, said, this is Verdun. It's the Somme. It's a deadlock. Because on the one hand, Russia's got, as I keep saying, 10 times the GDP, 3.5 times the population, 30 times the area, with allies like arms producing North Korea, arms producing Iran, arms producing China, gasoline buying or oil buying, natural gas buying India, etc. And that has to be matched. The inferior power has to match that juggernaut. And they can do it only if the EU in the immediate proximate area supplies them tank for tank, bullet for bullet. And the United States, then they won't do it, Jack, unless the United States pledges to give more, because they're terrified of Vladimir Putin. And so it's all predicated on the United States' willingness to be the main supplier to nullify Russian advantages. And every time somebody says, don't ever mention negotiations. You're just an appeaser. You like Putin? I've had that said to me. You can't even talk about negotiations. Yes, they belong in NATO. Of course they do. He did this crusade, then you have to ask yourself, what will it take? Because each time there's a demand for a Patriot battle, for a HIMARS missile platform, for a computer-guided 155-millimeter artillery weapon, for a sophisticated drone, it's always in the context of two things. You haven't done enough for us, and we need more. And then we do that, and we think we pause for a second, and then there's the next demand. So here was the tank demand. We gave the Bradley fighting vehicles. We thought, oh, well, we don't have to give tanks. And I remember, as a little side note, footnote here, Joe Biden said, I think, of March of last year, that you couldn't give tanks because that would be World War III. That's what he said. So he did. So we'll see if it's World War III. But my point is that no sooner had we given the Bradleys than they wanted the Abrams. No sooner had we given the Abrams. Now they want what, F-15s or F-16s, both? And so it's never ending because they're up against a nuclear power that's got a sizable military force, which as the war gets closer and closer to the border, that is proximate to Russia, it's propaganda that they're attacking Mother Russia by preemptive raids on the Black Sea fleet, on supply depots. They're attacking Mother Russia. It's not us trying to go into Kiev anymore. It's right here, just like the Swedes under Charles XII, just like Napoleon, just like Hitler. And so the propaganda is changing. It's much easier for Putin to rile up people that are willing to fight. And from all of our conjectures that he's unpopular, when you look at some of these polls, he's 80% still with him. And that's because the battle is getting closer to Mother Russia. And for the Ukrainians to win, and as they define victory, it means to get every Russian out. And to do that, you can't do a Verdun.
Right.
They never got the German army out of Belgium and France from World War I. They tried Gallipoli, they tried the Middle East, they tried knocking Turkey out, but they knew that they couldn't get them out in a frontal assault, especially after Russia fell and they brought in 500,000 Germans from the Eastern Front. So my point is they were looking for ways to break the deadlock. So I don't think Ukraine, and now we hear that the Russians are fortifying with forts and ditches and everything, waiting for the spring offensive of these tanks. I don't think 60 tanks are going to break through. And so what are they going to do to break through? Well, they're going to try to do what people do all throughout military history. They're going to try to find an alternate front. If Grant can't break the deadlock around Richmond, and he never did get to Richmond, Lee turned out to be a very poor offensive general when he went into Pennsylvania, but you put him in front of Richmond fighting for what he thought was his own soil, then he was deadly. And, you know, Mary Lincoln said that Butcher Grant, he's a butcher, because 100,000 casualties in the summer of 1864, right, on the eve of the election. So what do? You get a William Tecumseh Sherman and you say, go leave Tennessee, go around the back door, take Atlanta, march through Georgia, that kind of stuff. So right now, you wait. There's going to be people talking in the highest councils of military strategy that to break this deadlock, they're going to have to do things that are pretty dangerous. That is, they're going to have to increase the attacks on the supply lines inside Russia. They're going to have, and some of these attacks against Ukraine are coming from ships in the Black Sea fleet. You're going to have to take out another ship or two or three of them. You're going to have, they've already attacked a Russian airfield. They're going to have to do it again and again and again. And I just don't think that when the Russians say things like, no nuclear power has ever lost a conventional war on its own borders, we will not be the first, and we have the right to use other methods. That's what they've said. And I think those are other methods. And people say, well, you know, he's just saber rattling. Hey, what would be the advantage of dropping a 2-kiloton nuke? It would just break the threshold. And yeah, that's the point. It would open a brave new world, wouldn't it? A sick new world. But why risk it when you could negotiate something? The other thing is, very quickly, there's a history here, and that is in June of 1941, Germany invaded, and it was a tank battle, and very quickly it was determined that what saved the Soviet Union, they had about 30,000 tanks, but they only had 2,000 T-34s. The rest were obsolete. They had some Stalin Ks ones, but they were very rare. And the German Mark IV, even though it was better operated and the German tank crews were superior to the Russian counterparts, it ran into big trouble. It had a 50 millimeter gun versus, I think, a 77, 78 millimeter on the T-34. But the T-34 had sloped armor. It had a aluminum diesel engine. It was just a superior tank, and Hitler was flabbergasted. And he said, if you had told me, if you told me there were T-34s, I would have never invaded Russia. And that then what happened, Jack, was there was a tank race. So all of the brilliant breakthroughs in tank technology were not American, and they weren't British. They weren't Italian. They weren't in the Western Front. Out of that cauldron on the Eastern Front came the Panther, the Tiger I, the Tiger II, and then improved versions of the T-34. So every major development in tank technology took place right now where they're fighting. And they were things like sloped armor, 4 or 5 inches of armor, wide tracks, Christie suspensions, anti-armor shells, sabo rounds, et cetera, radios in the tanks. And it was just and so when the Russians look at Germans giving Leopard tanks, which I think you could argue are not as quite like Abrams, but they are more easy to use. They don't gulp, you know, aviation gas like Abrams. And the idea that Germany, of all countries, will now be sending its tanks into Russia, that just resonates historically with the Russians in a way that we can't even appreciate, because for them it's a redux of, oh my God, there's German tanks in Ukraine again. Right. We don't know how to handle them. We don't know how to do with this. And so it's a propaganda bonanza for Putin. And so what they're doing as we're speaking, they're building tank traps, they're digging in. And I just don't think that 60 tanks, even if they're the world's best tanks, Abrams and Leopards, are going to plow right through Russian lines, not in the age of drones and high velocity missiles. And right. So we'll see. But what was Victor, go ahead. But what was more scary, final Philip, is we've given them 1 million artillery shells, 1 million. And they want more. There are some very disturbing studies that are coming out that javelins will take 5 years at current rates of production to replace our depots, and on things like drones and air to air missiles and short ship to ship. All of those categories, we don't have them.
Right,
they're empty.
And he won't. We're putting ourselves at risk, and he, the president of Ukraine,
Zelensky,
is refusing. Zelensky asked, "Would you, negotiate with Putin?" No. And by the way, send me some planes too.
It doesn't matter how high that he has the moral edge, but it's an untenable position to tell an ally, "You are going to give me the following, and I want them all. And if you don't, I'm going to be very angry at you. And by the way, this opponent of mine has 7,000 nuclear weapons, and 1,000 of them are pointed at you. And he's threatened you and Britain and Germany for giving stuff to me, but I don't care." And that's not a tenable position. Whether it's moral or not, I don't know. Whether it's logical or not, I don't know. Is it understandable? Yes. If I was him, I'd probably say the same thing, but I'm not him. I'm an American. And my only concern, to tell you the truth, is American interest. It overrides his interest. And he is slowly, insidiously drawing us into a showdown with the Russian Federation. And I don't think it's necessary. I think we can continue to supply him without escalating, and we can negotiate. We can get a bunch of, you know, oligarchs, and we can sit them down and say, you guys know Putin, Rabamowitz or whatever his name is. We can get him, and we can get a bunch of people and tell us what he wants. And here's what the Ukrainians want. We'll make it a demilitarized zone for now. DMZ in Crimea and the borderlands that where there's a majority of Russian speakers. And then we can adjudicate it, and we won't put them in NATO, but we'll arm them to the teeth so Putin won't try it again. And that's a lot better than killing 200,000 people that we lost in 1 year. And there's going to be another 200 or 300,000. This thing is going to get huge. It's going to be the biggest death count since the Korean War or the Iran-Iraq War. Kind of reminds me of the Iran-Iraq War.
And Victor, why? Because of Joe Biden's effing up in Afghanistan, right? Would we be talking about this?
I would be a little bit more critical, Jack. I can, okay. If you want to plot the points of the wrong road of appeasement, I think it was A, Hillary Clinton's Russian reset, B, the hot mic conversation in Seoul, South Korea in 2012, where Obama said, give me some space and I'll be flexible on missile defense. And that deal was cemented and carried out. We got rid of missile defense. He was calm until Obama got reelected. Then he went into Crimea and he went into the eastern borders of Ukraine, and Obama did nothing. And then Obama refused. That was what's so ironic about the impeachment. We impeached a U.S. president for supposedly being too tough on Ukraine, for worrying about his future presidential opponent, Joe Biden, when he approved the military aid, which the Republicans pushed through, which was more than Obama was willing to give. He wasn't willing to give javelins and other offensive weapons. Trump did that. And as far as your opponent, of course, Trump is Joe Biden's opponent, and yet Joe Biden ordered a raid on his home. So it's just so. And then there's the Afghanistan thing. 40,000 vehicles, like I said, 40,000 vehicles. Gosh, 1.5 million personal weapons. Humvees, I think there are, I don't know how many, 4,000, 5,000 Humvees. It's just staggering. $1 billion in aircraft. And Vladimir Putin this week, Jack, was negotiating with the Taliban to buy the stuff. And it wasn't just that by fleeing Afghanistan, we destroyed deterrence, which made him mass on the borders more quickly because he didn't think we'd do anything. But it was he's going to get all of this equipment, and everybody says, well, it's not a Russian equipment. It'll be hard to integrate. No, he'll integrate it. You know, an M16, believe me, a Russian soldier who's using a bolt action weapon from 1950 will be happy to use an M4 and M16. Believe me, they will. And so that weaponry will end up in Putin's hands. That's very ironic, and because that took down our stores of weapons, and so did the Ukraine sale. And by the way, Joe Biden was still in that frame of mind. The first week, the first reaction he had to the attempted takeout of Kiev was, if Zelensky wants a ride out of that country, we'll go get him. So it wasn't right. It wasn't Churchillian as it's been used. He only adopted that as a fallback position on criticism.
Well, Victor, we have a minute or two left, and we conclude our usual business here by thanking our listeners. I do want to make a plug for a thing or two, though. One is I'd like our listeners to go to civilthoughts.com, and they can sign up for the free weekly email newsletter I write for the Center for Civil Society at what used to be called American Philanthropic, which changed our name to AmPhil. Anyway, but I write Civil Thoughts. It's free. It comes out every Friday, and it's a dozen plus recommended readings. I think you'll like it. I'd also like to recommend two social media things. One is, if you're on Facebook, visit the Victor Davis Hanson fan club, or visit Victor's site, or the Morning Cup that Victor runs on Twitter. At VD Hansen, that's Victor's handle. Now, also on Twitter, there's a website, there's a Twitter thing I came across recently. It's called Remember the Fallen, and it's at the address there is at 44 Magnum Blue One. And what 44 Magnum Blue One does is every day he puts up pictures and something to memorialize someone from the Vietnam War who died on that day. And Victor, as we were just talking about war, as you read the accounts, you see these 19-year-old Marine sergeant dying with valor, gallantry in the jungles of Vietnam. And then, of course, later you see for what? For what? We abandon them in the end. But anyway, it's a Twitter guy that will give you great pause every day. It's really worth seeing. Victor, as you've talked about before, you know, Victor Hansen, who you were named after. There are so many people so many Americans who perished bravely in foreign places, and they need to be remembered. And this particular site does that. And I want to recommend
it. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah. Now, Victor, a quick ending. One of our readers, raiders on Apple Podcasts, who leaves 5 stars. It's Marty. May Marty from Elkhart. And it's just very simple. Thank you so much, VDH. Thoroughly enjoy every one of your podcasts. May God bless you and yours, the Lowe family in Elkhart, Indiana. And there are many comments like this. Those of you who leave those comments, we read them all, who rate the show 5 stars. Practically everyone leaves 5 stars. Thanks really very much. We also read the comments on Victor's website. So thank you for listening, no matter what platform you're on. Victor, thanks as usual for all the brilliance you shared today. And we will be back soon with another episode of the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Thanks so much.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.